Another day, another dollar as a holler to the world. I love the way I'm living, love the Gucci, love the girls. Love the parties and the clubs, love the models and hot tubs. Love the German engineers set on deep dish dubs. Another tour around the world, entertaining the fans. I love walking through the airport, taking pictures, shaking hands. Every day for me's an oyster, crack it open, find a pearl. I love the way I'm living, what a holler to the world.
Welcome back to Marking Out with MVP and Dwayne Swayze.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
That's a Mace song. I don't know. Welcome back, Cotter.
Thank you.
Okay, right on. Man.
Jeez. Anyway, hi, we're back together with you to talk about wrestling and stuff.
Okay, so to start with a Patreon subscriber, it's Patreon subscriber's question. Guys, if you want to be able to send a question into MVP, and we will ask them on the show, make sure you sign up to our Patreon. It is the pinned comment on this video. All right, let's go with Mike Bradley from Louisiana, Gumbo Strong style. Mike wants to know, do you still have the treatment that got you hired in WWE, and would you be willing to share some of it exclusively on Patreon?
Yes, I do still have that treatment, because part of the reason that I'm still able to have MVP, and that is on my WWE contract, they acknowledge that MVP is my intellectual property, is because I invented MVP. And once I had the treatment for my pitch for the character put together, I did the poor man's copyright, where I put it in an envelope,
mailed it to
myself.
Okay.
And I still have that envelope. Although it's weird because now it's open just because all the years have gone by, so the seal is gone. Like the glue just evaporated. So, yes, I still have it. And I would say that for a lot of you young upcoming wrestlers, I'd let you see it, but not on Patreon. It's going to cost you. The game is to be sold, not told, boy. That shit, that treatment, that package was the doorway to me having a career that spanned over 20 years and millions of dollars. So, no, you can't look at it on Patreon. But if you got enough money, I might, you know.
10-4. Thank you, Mike, for sending your question. Okay. I'm not going to do it. Okay, P. In a big man versus smaller high flyer, how do you keep the size gap believable without killing the smaller guy's offense?
I think the best example of showing you how to do that and to make it believable to the extent that you can in pro wrestling, Rey Mysterio versus Big Show. You highlight on the smaller guy speed, quickness, agility. The big guy can't get to him. The little guy uses that speed and quickness to strike and get away, strike and get away. Rey Mysterio does lots of leg kicks. Before people were watching MMA, a lot of people didn't even know about MMA yet. Rey Mysterio was using leg kicks on bigger opponents. I don't care how big you are. I take out your knee, you're going down.
Mm-hmm.
Big Show, all 7 feet, 500 pounds of, because that back then I was big, Big Show, you know, overweight Big Show. Big, that's when he was a grouchy, angry giant. Oh man, he was a bitch to travel with. He'd be fucking mad, griping him. He just got this big 700-pound giant that's pissed off all the time. He was always great with me, though. We always had a great relationship. Big Show was always cool with me. But again, you watch Rey Mysterio and you watch Big Show because the story, the drama, is David versus Goliath. And Rey uses speed and quickness to attack Big Show to try to chop him down at the knees. But when Big Show finally got Rey, grabbed his ass, it was, oh, you know, like that. Oh, no, he finally caught him. And the story there is taking Big Show down. Because Big Show can knock Rey down whenever he wants. As soon as he catches him, you know he's going to be in trouble. But when the giant finally goes down, Ray's been chopping at this tree for a long time. So the way that the smaller guy is able to make that happen is by attacking the legs of the bigger guy. Because eventually, when he does that drop kick or that whatever to Big Show's knee, and Big Show finally takes the tumble and falls into the ropes, well, he's right there for the 619 finally. But how did that happen? Because Ray kept going after that leg, attacking the leg, and, you know, wearing out his knee. So it's done with psychology and storytelling where you go, you're pulling for the little guy. You're pulling for the little guy. And he's telling the story of, I can't fight this guy straight up. I have to use my strengths against his weaknesses. My strengths are my speed, agility, mobility. Whereas Big Show doesn't have that. And again, look how big you are. I take your knees out, you're going down. The knee only bends this way. It doesn't bend the other way. So you get a chance to, you know, jam up that knee, then the fight's over. But in our storytelling, we show the injury to the knee and the weakness to wear it down so that eventually, you know, the giant is, he's going to go down because that knee's damaged. He's hurt. Now they're the same size. So now Ray can hit him and do his stuff, you know. It's psychology. And I've always said in pro wrestling, the moves are the first thing you learn. Psychology is always the last thing that people really get a grasp of. And one of the biggest things I see with a lot of young guys now, and I deal with it, you know, with Bobby and Shelton. Like, you know, some of these guys are 165 pounds, and they're in there with Bobby or Shelton. And in their mind, because it's just fake phony wrestling, it should be a 50-50 match.
No,
man. No. If it was a real match, Shelton would be over in 30 seconds.
Right.
You know? So they don't understand. No, dude, yeah, just because we're playing characters and we're simulating combat, we're coming at it from different perspectives. And I came to this realization a long time ago that we're dealing with different eras and generational mindsets. I came up watching pro wrestling when it was still presented as real. And pro wrestling was MMA before MMA. Then the generation just behind me grew up with Vince McMahon saying, yeah, sports entertainment, none of it's real. And playing video games with Chun-Li. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so in that world, everybody's evenly matched. You know, yeah, you can use this female character and fight this big guy. And it's evenly matched if you got the skill set, you know. And that's why I kind of give the you know, the newer, younger kids, I give them a lot of leeway because everything evolves. And you can't be punished for something that you don't know. And if your concept of wrestling is that a man and a woman can have a match and go back and forth with moves because it's all make-believe, I think that's more of the later video game culture.
What were some of the messages or lessons you passed on when you had your own personal giant, Omos?
A lot of the lessons that I passed on to him were stuff that I learned from working with Big Show, working with Undertaker, working with Kane, you know, working with these giants, talking to him about how to compose himself, how to pace himself. Like, you're going to have guys that are going to want to lift you up off your feet and do moves to you. Say no. And Omos, you know, we went through that because it was kind of difficult for him being a new guy, just learning the ropes. And, you know, hierarchy and hierarchy matters in pro wrestling to a point. Usually, if you're a younger, greener guy and a more experienced veteran wants to do something, you give way to the veteran.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
But nowadays, veterans aren't like how they used to be. They don't have the same experience and the same grasp of psychology. So, you know, I told Omos, you're going to get a little 175-pound dude that's going to want to suplex you. You have to be comfortable to say, no, you can't do that. You can't suplex me. Well, why not? Because I'm a fucking giant. That's why. And part of my job with him was to protect him. And that's kind of how me and Bobby ended up together too, because Bobby's way too nice for the damage that he can do. He's one of the nicest guys around. And Bobby's way too giving. So, you know, guys will want to do stuff to Bobby, and Bobby would be like, and I'll be, no, no, you can't do that to him. And Bobby just be like, talk to Pete.
Yeah.
Like, no, I know you can't. Would you do that to Brock Lesnar? No. Well, that's Black Brock Lesnar. So no, you can't. No, you can't suplex him. No, you can't powerbomb him. Not you. So protect your size. Protect being a giant. And Batista told me that when he was training with Alpha and Sika, you know, they told him some of the best advice ever. Work how you look. Mm. If you big and jacked up and got all the muscles, you ain't got to do all that flipping and flying shit, because nobody, you look like, oh shit, he's going to whoop some ass. Work like that. So with Omos, you know, and he was a student of the game. He really worked hard to learn, and he was a sponge. You know, he used to call Undertaker and talk to him directly for advice and insight. And, you know, like I said, everything that I learned from working with Taker, because man, I was married to Taker and Kane for a long time. I worked with Big Show plenty of times. So from working with those guys, I was married to the not so great Khali for a while. So I know good giants, and I know the giants that absolutely fucking suck. Yes, Khali, you suck. And I know there's a billion Indians that are going to be mad at me right now, but you know what? Fuck all of you too. Unless you like me and you like the show, then hey, we're cool. But Khali still sucks. But all of those lessons that I learned from those guys are the things that I gave to Omos. And we'd work with smaller guys all the time. And I remember specifically one or two times that there were some smaller guys that something where, one specific thing that I remember where Omos had the one guy by the wrist. And this is a little guy. I'm not going to say his name because he's a nice guy. I like him. But we were doing the $10,000 challenge where, you know, if you could take the giant off of his feet, I'll give you 10 grand.
Okay.
And this guy, smaller guy, said at one point where Omos would have him by the wrist, and he would smack his hand away and do something. I said, whoa, back up. I say, hey, man, the giant has you by your wrist and you just smack his hand off? Come on, dog, you got to give me something better than that. It's a small detail, but it's a big thing. This guy's 7'4", nearly 400 pounds, with the hands this big. If he's got you by the wrist, your little ass ain't going to smack his hand away.
Right on.
If it's you and me, you could do that, you know, just break the leg, you know. That's fine. But no, not this is a giant. Treat him like a giant. And it makes you look better when you're able to finally get him rocking and reeling, you know. There's lessons like that. Just protect your size, protect being a giant. And Ray, being the smallest guy, always knows how to tailor his offense to the size of the guy he's working with. And that's the story when you get a little guy and a big guy. David and Goliath, you got to overcome. You got to chop this monster down and eventually get him down. But a lot of younger, less inexperienced guys feel like, no, we're the same size. I can suplex you. And no, man, that's not how it works. And you can do that. You can do the video game style of wrestling. But when you do that, you take something out of it for the fans. You take out the drama and the psychology. And the psychology is what really draws people in, because the story is, how is this little guy going to beat this big guy? And if right away the little guy gets in there and suplexes the big guy, then, oh, shit, this is, you know, this should be no problem.
What's the name of the giant in AEW?
Satnam Singh.
Satnam Singh. Have you had any dealings with him at all?
Oh, he's a great guy, man. Okay. I like him a lot. We talk, you know, I haven't worked with him at all, okay. But just, you know, talking in the back and hanging out, and we'll have a drink at the bar. And when I first met him, I was fucking with him because he had on a hat, one in a billion. And I said, man, you ain't special. I just left one of you motherfuckers, man. I just left one of you motherfuckers over there. You ain't special to me. One in a billion in India, but it's 4 billion people on the planet. You know, you ain't the only big motherfucker around here. And right away, that endeared him to me. Like, right. I started laughing. But Giant Heat is real.
Like, oh, like, word?
Like, oh, man, I'm taller than Omos. I'm tall, you know, like. Like back in the day, what they call little people now, were known as midgets. Like midgets used to have beef about like who's the midget, you know, like who's the main guy. You know? The giant comes in town, like I'm the giant, you know, like no, I'm the giant. You know? And Big Show and Khali used to beef about, you know, they had giant heat.
Who was bigger?
Well, Khali was taller. And he was a bodybuilder. Like, okay, he had muscle, you know, but he wasn't an athlete. Like when you watch Khali walk out to the ring, if for those of you who understand Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, the planet Hoth battle, where they had the big AT-AT movers, those big things walking in the ships had to do wrap their cable around the legs, and then they just fell over. Yeah. That's what I used to tell Khali he was. I said, you're a big AT-AT, man. I don't fear you at all. Big Show can move. He's an athlete. He used to train boxing with my man, Attila. He worked with me on South Beach. We did nightclub security. And Attila was on the Swedish Olympic boxing team.
Oh.
And at one point, as a pro, I think he was ranked top 10 as a heavyweight. He was a legit dude, and he used to train with Big Show boxing, and train Big Show, and like I wouldn't want to fight Big Show. Khali, I'll fight him in an instant. I wouldn't even bat an eyelash. As a matter of fact, I say this all the time to make this very clear. Dalip Singh is a funny guy. I like him. He's funny. He's cool. The great Khali absolutely sucks as a wrestler. Dalip Singh is a cool guy.
Okay, right on.
So I say this talking about the wrestling ability of the great Khali. Trash. And I had to explain to him, you're only the great Khali as long as I allow you to be the great Khali. You're not really the great Khali. Like, we're bumping for you to make you the great Khali. When Undertaker let you pin him with your foot on his chest, that's what made you somebody. Because somebody laid down for you. Said at any given time, I could kill the giant. I could kill you off. No, man. So one afternoon, I had to make him understand, dude, I will beat your ass. I'm not scared of you. So we were talking shit in the afternoon. Everyone's in the ring, you know. And he was, oh, oh, oh. And I did a low ankle pick. I dropped down to my belly, shot in on him. And I put my hand right behind his ankle and my shoulder right beneath his knee. So the pressure is pulling here, pushing here.
Okay.
So that knee's going. You gotta go to relieve that pressure. It took him 30 seconds to fall.
Remember?
He was so embarrassed that, you know, he got up. Now, that motherfucker's strong, you know. But I'm standing over him as he's going to get up. And I said, look how many times I could kick you in the face before you get up. I said, dude, you can't whoop nobody, man. You need to slow down. And, you know, Arn Anderson, hey, come on, man. Settle that down now. You know, like, and he was embarrassed and upset.
Okay.
But stop talking shit, dog, because you ain't really great. You're only as great as we allow you to be. And that's something that everybody got to remember in pro wrestling. Guys get egos because they get the push and they get made into, you know, I'm a champion. Yeah, bitch, you can't whoop nobody, man. So you got to watch your mouth. Mm. Yeah, we respect you. You're the gate. You draw money. But don't let that shit go to your head and let you think, yeah, I'm really a tough guy. Because then we got real tough guys in wrestling that will make mincemeat out of your ass, you know? I remember Roman Reigns didn't take too kindly to Matt Riddle, who gets himself into trouble all the time. But Matt Riddle said, man, I could whoop the WWE champion easily. Roman ain't like that, mm. you know? And I get that. I understand that. I respect that. He's the guy. But in a fight, the guy who fought in the UFC, who was a trained fighter, would probably make quick work of Roman. And that's no shade of Roman or disrespect. Right, if you're a trained fighter versus somebody who trains to pretend to fight, you know, there's something to be said for that. So how the fuck did we get here?
I don't know.
It's the monkey shoulder. It's working.
We've been drinking. But yeah, somehow rounding it up. Giant, protect your size. And remember, you're only as good as the person you're working with makes you look. Because if you get in there with somebody, Undertaker said it best one day. He said, man, I can make the lights come on and go off. I can make it thunder. I can make it lightning. But if you don't sell my shit, none of it matters.
Facts.
So I hope there was an answer somewhere.
Yeah, that
monkey shoulder fueled ramble.
Like, comment, subscribe, and share. In intergender tags, what are your rules for safety and stories so the match lands with the crowd?
Let me stop you right there at intergender. I'm gonna piss a lot of you people off right now, and that's okay. I am not a fan of intergender wrestling. I don't like it. I'm not a fan of it. And again, this is what I was talking about before, the video game culture, mm-hmm. who are now in wrestling, grew up playing Chun-Li and kicking the shit out of people. I approach wrestling from the simulated combat mindset. I've always liked the shoot style. I like the realness. That's why I fell in love with Japanese wrestling, the brutality, you know, it's presented as sport. And as soon as you do intergender shit, now it's unbelievable. You don't have intergender boxing.
No.
You don't have intergender MMA because biology matters. I once asked my ex-girlfriend, who was a professional fighter, and I was talking to her about intergender wrestling. And I said, okay, all things level. A male fighter, your height, your weight, with a comparable skill set to you. You guys fight. Real, not light sparring, real boxing match. What happens? I get killed. She didn't even wait. She just said, I get killed. It's biology.
I know.
I remember when I first got back to WWE and Ronda Rousey was there.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said something about it. And I said, man, Ronda Rousey's half my size. She might whoop you. She couldn't whoop me. And he goes, what, man, she was an Olympic, blah, blah, blah. I said, dude, I went up against a 3-time judo Olympian from Argentina in the finals of the IBJJF Masters Ultra Heavy, a guy named Orlando Buccino. I think he won silver in the Pan Ams. Like, this dude is a world-class judoka, 3-time Argentina Olympian. He didn't take me off my feet. And we went hard for the gold medal.
Right on.
I took silver. I lost to an Olympian. But he couldn't take me off my feet. What's this 120-pound woman gonna do to me? Yeah, you got skills, but I got skills too.
Right, right.
I'm bigger, I'm stronger. You can't whoop me. So when I see intergender wrestling, I'm immediately taken out of it. Just because in combat you don't do intergender, because it's just not realistic. You can take, again, in legitimate combat, you can take the women's champion in her weight class, and you can get some jabroni from the fucking ranked top 50, and he's gonna whoop her. It's biology. So just to be honest, man, I know it's going to disappoint a lot of people, but I don't like intergender wrestling because I don't approach pro wrestling from the video game mindset.
Have you been in any of those matches?
What, intergender?
Yeah, I don't think I was.
And when I was on the indies,
okay,
many, many years ago, I did one intergender match, and that shit was stupid. And I wish I hadn't done it, but I was talked into it. And I was young, you know. I'm not a fan of it. I don't like it. You know, there are people that do like it, and there are people that have a lot of fun doing it, and they enjoy it. And fine, you know, like I said, if people want to see it and they're buying a ticket to see it, then I'm not going to say you're doing it wrong, because if you're selling tickets and you're covering your costs and you're feeding a fan base, then by all means. But I'm not a fan of it. So the answer to your question is I don't give a fuck.
That's a 10-4. Book it. If the state, venue, or TV standards bar a move or blood that night, or a move like pile drivers, how do you rework the match and still pay off the story?
So that's something we have to deal with all the time, because some states have stricter athletic commissions than other states. And some states will shut down your show immediately for violating their stuff.
Really?
So if that state doesn't allow tables and you do a table, they can and will come in and shut the show down. So if you're a promoter, you can't fuck around
athletic commission.
Yeah. So we know beforehand what state we're in, and the producer or coach will say, oh, can't do that tonight because we're in, you know, Missouri, strict athletic commission. And if you're at the point where you're wrestling on television, hopefully you have enough experience and enough skill set and enough hope from your help from your producer or coach to be able to still have the match without whatever it was that you wanted. You don't need blood in a match unless it's, you know, like a payoff match or a cage match or, you know, something like that. You know, you don't need tables and chairs in every match. And if you have to use gimmicks in all of your matches, I question your talent and ability as a professional wrestler. Again, I'm gonna piss people off today. That's why I'm not in a deathmatch wrestling. I don't feel that it takes talent. I think any fat dude can get up there that has a high tolerance for pain and doesn't mind bleeding all over the place and hit each other with light tubes. And, you know, like, I don't, my opinion, a lot of people disagree with me. There are people that like death matches. I'm not a fan. I don't care for it. If you are a professional wrestler, you should be able to get in that ring and put on an entertaining match without bells and whistles. Your bells and whistles should be your moveset and your psychology. If a pile driver is banned, then there's fucking thousands of moves. You know, you gotta have the pile driver. You need that. Like, there's other things you can do. And if not, then again, I question your ability, your talent. If the only way I could see, like, you know, where blood is needed is if it's a, you know, a cage match ending a feud, or if it's starting off something, getting heat on somebody to lead into a big deal. And then it should be special, because there's no other blood on the show. And this one person gets busted open. It's like, oh man, that's a, you know, big deal. Let me make this very clear. I'm not saying that, because you got lots of professional wrestlers who also can do the deathmatch stuff and they enjoy it. I'm saying specifically about the deathmatch guys who can't really wrestle. They can just go and break stuff and bleed.
10-4.
I don't like that shit. Guys like John Moxley, he likes to do that stuff, but he can wrestle.
He can wrestle.
He can go out there and have a match without that, you know? It's just his preference. He enjoys that. So if you are in a state with a strict athletic commission, you're told, you know that beforehand. So if you have an idea for something you might want to do, it's up to the producer or the coach to say, no, we can't do that because we're in this state. And then as a professional, card subject to change. You change it, you adjust, and you give an entertaining match regardless of what you can or can't do, because you can still have a wrestling match. So, and don't fuck around with the commission, because whether or not you have a show is up to those people on the commission.
Are they actively sitting in an arena?
Yeah, they have their representatives there. certain states, you have to go before the show and see their doctor. They take your blood pressure. You know, they take a few vitals to make sure that you're fit and
healthy. The company doctor.
The state athletic commission. Wow. Will have their representatives there. It's a racket. And that's why Vince McMahon came out years ago and said, we're not sports combat, we're sports entertainment. Because he was trying to get out from paying the athletic commissions. Because the athletic commission is basically like some old mob shit. They tax you to put on a show, you know. And you got to pay the VIG, you know. Yeah. They don't really do anything. You know, they're supposed to be there for your health and safety. They don't give a fuck about your health and safety. They just want that slice of the pie. You know, whatever percentage of the gate they get or whatever the fee is, that's all they're there for. Their doctors, if you got high blood pressure, what are they going to know? He can't wrestle tonight. You know, okay, I can't wrestle here in Minnesota tonight. You know, like.
So the state athletic commission, the same commission, I'm assuming that would be regulating boxing, is the exact same?
Yeah.
For professional wrestling?
Yeah. Because then later on, once WWE said, no, we're not combat, we're sports entertainment, we don't fall under that. Well, then they said, oh, well, we're going to adjust the athletic commission. Now pro wrestling falls under the athletic commission. You still want to put on a show, you got to pay. Right. Fuck you, pay me. So, it's a racket. It's just a touch-all. The athletic commissions don't really do anything. They just get a paycheck from the various promoters. Now, maybe in boxing and MMA, the athletic commissions might play more of a hand in fighter safety. But in pro wrestling, they don't. Now, they don't make a big enough impact on what we do and our health. And I don't think very highly of the athletic commissions and their involvement in pro wrestling. And boxing and MMA, maybe it's different, but... And, you know, they basically, you know, you can't break a table, you can't bleed, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, not tonight.
right.
If you feel that, you know, there's a point in this story that, you know, you got to get busted open, well, we can't do it in Missouri. We got to wait till we get to New York or, you know, wherever, where they're a lot more flexible with those rules. So, in summation, you change your shit. And if you got talent and ability, one not being able to do one thing shouldn't really matter. You know, okay, no problem. We switch and do this, you know. Because I've talked about how many times during an actual match, shit goes wrong.
Yeah.
And on the fly, you got to be able to rock. So, oh, man, I lost my razor blade. I can't get color now. You know, like, yeah, we still don't get the color. Just lay still. I'm going to get right over your eyebrow. Hard blade. Damn. You know? Nothing changes. Or just location. All right, we can't do it this week. We'll do it next week. But again, one move shouldn't stop you from being able to pay off a match. The whole body of the match should culminate with a payoff. And one move shouldn't make the difference. You should have a skill set and a talent reservoir that allows you to overcome any obstacle like that.
That time again, man. We've done it again.
Sakao. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I just had a cool experience recently. I introduced someone to the movie Scarface.
Oh.
They had never seen Scarface before.
Right on.
And for years, I've been using little catchphrases or repeating things from the movie. And they had no idea what the fuck I was talking about, which was kind of funny. And I had to explain, am I yayo? Yayo, what is yayo? You know, like, where does that come from? Chichi, get the yayo. You know, like, no, you don't, that's Cuban slang from, no, nothing. So we watched Scarface together. And it was pretty cool because the final summation was, what a crazy fucking ending. What's with this dude and his sister? But it was also funny because I've seen Scarface 20 times at least.
Okay.
I don't know anybody that's seen Scarface that hasn't seen it more than once.
Right on.
There's some rappers that I've seen it hundreds of times. You know? But there's certain scenes in the movie where I'm like saying the dialogue right along with it. My ringtone used to be the bad guy speech. That used to be my ringtone. You know the bad guy speech, Scarface?
You never seen a... Never seen a bad guy.
You guys are a bunch of fucking assholes.
What is it?
Because you don't have the guts to be where you want to be. You need people like me.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can point your fucking finger and say that's the bad guy.
Yeah.
Well, take a good look, because it's going to be a long time before you see another bad guy.
Okay, yeah. To remember the ending, I remember, yeah.
So say goodnight to the bad guy. Yeah. Oh, man, what a scene. I'm going to get goosebumps.
Right on.
But, yeah.
Have you seen the original?
Yes, of course.
I've never seen that. That's like 1930s or 40s?
Yeah, 30s.
Okay.
And the crazy thing about it is, the original, it was same thing, gangster shit, but it was Prohibition era.
Oh,
so it was alcohol.
Okay.
Instead of cocaine. Same thing, low-level mobster. Pulls a little good little mission, comes up. The boss is like, hey, we can use a guy like you. But as he starts coming up, he has big ambitions. Hey, man, you think it's too small. We could do bigger. And the boss is like, hey, man, I'm the boss here. You know your role. The beats of the movie are the same.
Okay.
He goes back to his mom and Little Italy. His little sister, mom's get out of here with that gangster money. Little sister's, no, don't go. The phone call with Frank, when Tony shows up with Manolo, and they show up, and they just tried to kill Tony. You don't remember that part?
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where the boss, Frank Lopez, him and Tony finally have a standoff, and Tony tells Frank, Tony is sitting at Frank's table with Frank's girl. And they show up, and Tony's like, what the fuck, man? I mean, Frank. And he goes, I'm giving you an order. And Tony Montana says, you know what it takes to give orders? Balls. You don't got that. So at that moment, Frank knows, like, okay, this motherfucker got to go. So at the club later on, that's the scene where the two fucking hitmen try to take out Tony.
Okay.
He gets Manolo and Chi-Chi and Frank the Pig. Nick the Pig. He says, at 3 a.m. sharp, you call this number. And you say, we blew it. He got away. So Tony's there with the sling and the pistol with his boys. And Frank's, oh my God, what happened? You know, what happened to you, Tony? Oh, they tried to get me, man. They tried to kill me. And, you know, it's the tension of, you know, he's talking to Frank. And at 3 a.m., the phone rings. And he goes, you going to answer that? He goes, oh, it's just El Vito. We had a fight, you know. He goes, I'll get it for you. He goes, no. I'll get it. And he answers the phone. It's 3 a.m. Tony knows what the call is. But he goes, okay, I'll be home in a little while, whatever. You know, he's like, just El Vito, you know, the Michelle Pfeiffer, Elvira. And at that point, Tony knows, because that was a play. The hitman just caught the fate. We fucked up. He got away. Tony knew what the fuck was going on, so he knew it was time. And he took Frank out. But the cool part in that scene there was when, Tony, please don't kill me. Tony, please don't kill me. And he goes, I'm not going to kill you. Manolo, shoot that piece of chicken. Manny walks up. Bam! He's done. And then the cop's sitting there, you know, the crooked cop who just stepped in to tell Tony, you got to pay me this much a month. And give me some first class tickets to, you know, he's sitting there. I told him. And Frank's like, no, man, fuck you too. He's like, what? And he shoots him in the gut. You can't kill a cop. Goes, whoever said you was one. And he goes, but Frank Lopez went out on his knees begging for his life. Mel, the crooked cop, fuck you. But in the original, they keep those same beats.
Same, okay.
Yeah, same shit, same situation. And same thing at the end, man. Goes out in the blades of glory.
But you know? And any key dialogue exactly the same?
Not exactly the same, okay. But the same spirit, same, you know, beats, you know, okay. The same, very similar. Was it Paul Mooney? Is that who? Not Paul Mooney. God, I'm drawing a total blank, man. I can't remember. Who's the actor that starred in the original? But it was Prohibition era gangsters,
okay.
And then when they did release the one in '84, they just updated everything to cocaine. But if you get a chance to see the original, it is pretty cool.
Okay,
especially knowing that everybody in that movie's dead.
And I haven't seen the original in the 1984 in a long, long time.
Oh, man, go re-up, man. Yeah, it's. I watched it with Camden.
Oh, word.
Yeah, I let Camden watch it. We watched it together. And I don't have a problem with showing him R-rated movies. Right. Because that's where parental guidance comes in.
Right on.
This shit is on the news.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, kind of explaining to him what that world is. And I mean, it was a lot of violence, you know, a lot of drugs and a lot of, but me explaining to him, like, this is real. This movie's not real, but these events are real. This stuff really happens. And this is what happens in the end. That gangster life almost exclusively ends up with death or prison. Very, very rarely does a guy live a G life and never go down. That's extremely rare. Usually you're gonna be dead or in prison, you know. And I kind of like, for all the cars and the glamour and, you know, that's what, like, when we're rapping, I'm always saying, like,
and the girls.
Well, money, power. First you get the money. When you get the money, then you get the power. Once you get the power,
then you get the girl. Yeah, yeah.
But just teaching Camden and showing him, you know, the harsh reality of life. And, you know, like I was saying, rappers always rapping about all the bodies they stacked up and all the drugs they sold. But none of these rap about doing time. You out here killing everybody, yeah, and selling all the weight, but you ain't never been to jail. You know, you ain't been locked up one time. You ain't rapping about them fucking the cheese sandwiches and Jim Jones Kool-Aid. Yeah, okay, buddy. All right. You a hard rock. That's one of the things I love about the homie West Side Gun. He's always dropping little bars about, you know, taking out for a bag of Jack Mackerel's in the can. You buy a can of mackerel fish.
Okay.
And I don't know, maybe it costs $2 a can or something, you know.
Like a sardine type thing?
Kind of, but bigger pieces.
Okay. Yeah.
But 10 cans of Jack Mack, man, you can make something happen, brother, you know. Like, you got a laundry bag full of soups. That's some money in there, you know. Or no, you know, watching, well, he drops that line about being in the day room with the shades on, don't touch the TV, like, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you're going to rap about doing crime, rap about doing time, because right, that's a part of it.
10-4.
But I digress. Where are we now?
Yeah, we just need them to do their job, man.
Like, comment, subscribe, share, please. We greatly appreciate it. We thank you for your viewership. The numbers are growing. We're having a great time. You are too, based on the comments that we receive. We appreciate when you leave us comments. Leave us criticism, suggestions, it's all good. Dwayne is not a bot. He is actually responding to your comments. Respect the Dan. I had to put Ryan on behind the camera, teach him about a little Steely Dan and some samples. I told him about Lord Tariq and Peter Guns losing all their money for Deja Vu because they didn't get the sample cleared. Black Cow, Steely Dan. Then I played Champion from Kanye. Did you realize that they were a champion in their eyes? That's Kid Charlemagne, Steely Dan. Yes, a lot of rappers have sampled the Dan. And as you guys know, I'm like a Steely Dan aficionado. Probably my favorite band. I don't know, it's hard, man. You know, Jamiroquai gets up in there to Police Bad Brains. But I love Steely Dan. That's because I have a sophisticated musical palate, unlike you. You like Playboi Carti. Yeah, I said that, exactly. I saw something where they were asking some younger generation, you know, who's got better lyrics, Nas or Playboi Carti? And he's like, no, Playboi Carti, dog. I'm like, man, if you don't get
it. No, they can't mean that. They can't fucking mean that.
They do, though, because what they like, in their opinion,
yeah,
like bars?
Well, then they need to hear it. Don't just blindly comment. There's no comparison.
Yeah, make whatever music you like. If people dig your shit, go for it. But don't tell me this motherfucker got better bars.
No, no.
It's impossible.
Not the Nas.
Stop.
Godson?
Nas.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, probably, arguably, the greatest wordsmith.
Facts.
You know, I'm going to say Rakim all the time.
No, but, gotcha.
But you can make an argument for Nas being the greatest to put pen to paper for hip hop. But anyway, I digress. I'm an old man shaking my fist. That's how we go.
Let's go.
Take us home.
I get to say it today. See you, Space Cowboy.
I just lay back in something new. Whiskey 21 and over low ball. Make it too neat, Dizza from Harlem. Yeah, I'm from Houston off of Fondren. Mike Mazan and real world flow. Plant these seeds in the streets and in weeks, watch it blossom. Dark night, riding on chrome, swinging through Gotham. It's me and Pete, repaving these...